From Silicon Valley to Wall Street, the promise and perils of artificial intelligence are playing out on the world stage. But what will the next phase of AI adoption look like? Which companies, from big tech to startups, will dominate? And where do the risks and unintended consequences lie? I'm Emily Chang. Join me at Bloomberg Tech in San Francisco, May 9th, to answer many of the industry's burning questions, alongside Snap's Evan Spiegel, Xbox President Sarah Bond, OpenAI's Brad Lightcap, top researcher Dr. Fei-Fei Li of Stanford, and many more. More details and just a few tickets left at Bloomberg.com/TechSF.
This is the Bloomberg Business of Sports show, where we explore the big money issues in the world of sports. I'm Scarlett Fu.
And I'm Damian Sassow.
Michael Barr is off this week, no doubt getting ready for the big game.
No doubt. We have
an exciting show lined up in his absence because we are helping you get ready for the Super Bowl.
That's right. We're going to take you behind the scenes of the big game. We'll talk with ASM Global CEO Ram Bansian and Doug Thornton, ASM's Global Executive Vice President of Arenas, Stadiums, and Theaters.
ASM Global is a premier venue management company with more than 350 venues around the world, including one State Farm Stadium in Arizona, which, by the way, is the host site of this year's Super Bowl.
That's right.
All that and more is on the way on the Bloomberg Business of Sports show. But first, yes, it's a big, big week for football, but it's also been very exciting for NBA fans.
Yes, it has, hasn't it, Scarlett? A ton is going on. We had the trade deadline with Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, and Russell Westbrook all ending up on new teams. And of course, LeBron James set the milestone.
LeBron James, a shot at history.
That's right. LeBron James is now the NBA's all-time scoring leader, as you just heard, courtesy of TNT. Here's King James speaking to reporters after that milestone.
You know, I'm a historian of the game, so I know what, you know, guys like Kareem and Wilt and MJ and Magic and Bird, and, you know, Oscar Robertson, Elgin Baylor, the rest, you know, I can be up here all night talking about so many greats and legends. You know, for me, personally, you know, it's just an honor to be just named with the greats.
LeBron James there speaking to reporters courtesy of ESPN.
That's LeBron on the court, but he's doing pretty well for himself off the court, Scarlett. His net worth is now estimated to be around $1.1 billion.
So for more, let's bring in Bloomberg Wealth team leader Brian Chipata, who also covers sports. Brian Chipata, LeBron James made headlines this week because, of course, he became the top scorer in the NBA, surpassing Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. But you guys took a look at his business empire, and the numbers are going up here.
Yeah, I mean, we've long suspected that LeBron was a billionaire, but this seemed like obviously a natural time to go back and take a step back and look at just how impressive LeBron has been both on and off the court. We value his overall fortune at about $1.1 billion. That's a combination of all the salary that he's gotten, the various sponsorships, his investments, and also his businesses, Spring Hill Company, the entertainment business that he runs with his longtime business partner among them. So it's really impressive because he's obviously still playing and still very much at the top of his game in the NBA, and yet he's also, you know, really, really been accomplished off the court as well.
Yeah, and what's most amazing is the portfolio of investments that he's made, right? I mean, he's not an old man. So for him to now own and convert through ownership of Liverpool a 1% stake in Fenway Sports is pretty impressive. I mean, he owns a piece of Fenway Sports, for crying out loud, but also Beats Electronics, which was sold to Apple for $3 billion back in 2014. I mean, just some incredible moves. Talk to us a little bit about some of the advice Warren Buffett gave to him.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty funny. When I was going back and thinking about this story, I wanted to see kind of what kind of stuff that he's heard from business luminaries, and Buffett was basically asked to address LeBron's question of what should I invest in back in 2015, and he said just do an index fund, man. Like
passive investing,
a little bit every year.
You're really good at basketball, but you're not going to also be really good as an investor. It's the same advice I give to 99% of my clients, the people who ask, and it's pretty funny because I think LeBron has proven to be the exception rather than the norm. It's possible that obviously passive investing would have yielded a lot of money for him as well, because he brings in, you know, $44.5 billion this year. But at the same time, he's done really well for himself off the court too. And I think that really speaks to the, you know, he's embraced the moniker of King James for so long that he's known he was going to be a successful basketball player. And he's known that as a result, he's going to have to take care of his finances. And I think it's been honestly just like pretty impressive overall how he's managed to do that.
And he's basically created a blueprint for other professional athletes. Back in the day, pro athletes signed endorsement deals. That's how they made their money along with their salary. But this is a whole different level of building equity in companies, associating yourself with brands, kind of becoming more than just LeBron James of the Cleveland Cavaliers or LeBron James of the LA Lakers.
Yeah, I think it's a really great point. And it's something that obviously through this podcast we're able to see. It's just this maturation of the professional athlete from just not really knowing what to do with becoming a multimillionaire overnight to really thinking hard about the role models that they want to follow. And yeah, building that equity, finding brands that they believe in and not just endorse them, but also kind of have a stake and have a skin in the game when it comes to ultimately building a fortune.
And building a family business, because his son Bronny is an elite prospect. And yeah. So, you know, at some point, a lot of this will, you know, generationally transfer over to his children. But I'm more of the point that, you know, by the time this is said and done, you know, he could be playing with his son. I mean, this is a 38-year-old man who's playing in the prime of his career with over $1 billion in the bank. I mean, he can play pretty much as long as he's healthy, right? Wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I mean, I was just looking back at his stats, and it's really incredible that there's been really no drop-off. I mean, I think it speaks to, obviously, his frame of mind, his willingness to put in the work in the gym. But, I mean, he's ranking near the top of the league, again, in points, rebounds, assists.
Amazing.
Obviously, the Lakers are not having a great year, and it doesn't look like they're going to be getting that much greater. But at the same time, you know, he's still in peak condition, and it looks like, yeah, his stated goal is that he would love to play with his son, who is a top 50 prospect right now, senior in high school.
Now, something else that I know you and Damian have been buzzing about is some personnel moves at a certain team in New York, not the Knicks.
Not the Knicks, no. The Brooklyn Nets, Brian. What do you think about the Brooklyn Nets and what they're doing over there?
It certainly seems like a rebuild, doesn't it? It's basically the end of an era in the sense of the super team that Brooklyn was trying to build. Remember, James Harden was obviously on the team. That was supposed to be the team that took them to the championship that justified a $3.5 billion purchase from Joe Tsai. And now we're pretty much in rebuilding mode.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, apparently Joe Tsai got a massive haul from this. I'm looking at, you know, first round picks in 23, 25, 27, 29, and a 28 pick swap. My question for you is, if you look at the Knicks, they have a lot of draft picks also. Do draft picks even work in the NBA anymore?
I mean, that's the question. I think it's always, you know, do you want to take...
The 76ers thing still, right?
Do you want to take the sure thing, or do you want... Nothing's a sure thing, obviously, because, of course, with Brooklyn, Durant missed his first year entirely due to injury. Nothing's a sure thing. I don't want to jinx anything, obviously, but you think about who is running the Phoenix Suns these days, and Matt Ishbia is coming in, new owner taking over for Robert Sarver, and you want to make an immediate splash. You don't want to say, okay, I have first round picks, and you know, wait a few years, wait 4, 5, 6 years, and we'll start to build this thing up. You want to make a splash right away, and I think that's a theme that you can see across professional sports franchises. We wrote last year on the Wealth team about Steve Cohen, hedge fund manager and New York Mets owner, and how he's just willing to spend big to win now. And I think that's something that you could maybe extrapolate to why the Suns made this move right away.
I mean, Devin Booker, Chris Paul. I mean, Chris Paul, we do a lot with Chris Paul here at Bloomberg. DeAndre Ayton, I mean, it's a super team. I mean, the other one was Kyrie Irving leaving, right? So, you know, I guess what comes next for Joe Tsai? I mean, the verdict is still out, but, you know, let's hope he doesn't find himself in a situation such as the Knicks are in, where they have a plethora of draft picks and not a whole heck of a lot of talent on the roster.
Yeah, it's really tough. I mean, the New York media market is obviously unrelenting when it comes to its sports. But I mean, I think to your point, he did get a good haul for this. It certainly seems like, if all the reports are true, and you really just be judicious and be smart when it comes to the draft. I think, you know, you've seen other examples of this throughout sports where you can really rebuild through the draft pretty quickly and build up a team. You got to do it right. I mean, I've been a Chicago Cubs fan, and obviously I still think back to that World Series win, and that was entirely constructed through, by and large, the draft process in the Major League Baseball. So we'll see what happens. But Joe Tsai's plans to win big with the splashy super team really hasn't panned out.
So is the excitement over basketball in New York going to swing back to the Knicks from the Nets now?
We'll see. I mean, it does seem to swing, but also it seems like the loyalties are pretty firm, too.
Firmly entrenched.
Yeah, exactly. Both of them are having, you know, ups and downs, certainly over recent years. Seems more downs than ups, but But, you know, it really only takes one or two really, really bold moves to swing things, especially in the NBA, I feel like.
Well, I mean, look, you know, I guess at the end of the day, there's been a lot of movement here. You know, obviously the Nets are in a rebuild. You know, let's talk a little bit more, if I can ask you, about that historic night on television when LeBron broke the record. I mean, from what I heard, it attracted something in the order of $3.7 million, like an all-time record in viewership. Is that right?
Wait, yeah. Can I just say one thing? Did you see still pictures of, you know, when LeBron broke the record? Everyone in the stands had their phone in front of their faces.
Oh, yeah.
That's it.
Even Bronny did. You might have seen on Twitter, but LeBron's sons were right in the right by the basket where he made that fateful shot, and they both had their phones up. They were ready to record it. LeBron in the locker room was looking at the video taken by Bronny and was like, "That's awesome." Everyone's looking through their phones at the moment that it happened.
Wow. Well, I mean, you want to hear something interesting? I mean, I just am reading this here. Before Tuesday night, the minimum price to get into that game was $796. It was $100 on Wednesday. I mean, it just to get into the game. I mean, if you were gambling that he was going to break it, then I mean, it was just a massive, massive.
But you know
uptick.
What? Every point after that is a new record.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
That's a good way to look at it. I mean, I'm just honestly amazed that it was one of those records that you were not sure would ever get
broken,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, Michael Jordan obviously didn't get there. He also obviously took time off multiple times during his career, but I think it really also speaks to LeBron's longevity in the league. I mean, he plays, it feels like, every game. I mean, I really can't think of many times when he's been out for an extended period, not that I track it as closely as some people do, but he's almost the Cal Ripken, I would almost say, of basketball. He's just always there and always putting up exceptional numbers.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if anyone caught this, but there has been some blowback against Michael Jordan because he didn't really, inverted commas, congratulate LeBron after breaking the record.
He just shaded him?
It wasn't like the kind of congratulations I think that social media wanted to see from Michael Jordan. I think. I don't know. I'm hearing about all this. But nevertheless, look, I mean, you know, there's no comparison between the two. They're both the goats in my book, you know, in their own different ways and different times. And so, you know, anybody who tries to compare them, I mean, good luck.
Well, the other thing that'll be interesting is whether LeBron ultimately takes the same path as Michael Jordan and goes into the ownership ranks of the NBA. The sky's really the limit for him, obviously, with a fortune of over $1 billion already. He can do
whatever
he wants.
He can buy a pickleball team.
Done.
You can buy every pickleball team with that.
Brian, thanks so much for stopping by. Brian Chapata is Bloomberg's wealth team leader, and of course, you can catch his excellent reporting online at Bloomberg.com. Coming up next on the show, we've got Ron Bensian and Doug Thornton of ASM Global. That is the firm in charge of the venue that's hosting this year's Super Bowl. You're listening to the Bloomberg Business of Sports from Bloomberg Radio around the world.
From Silicon Valley to Wall Street, the promise and perils of artificial intelligence are playing out on the world stage. But what will the next phase of AI adoption look like? Which companies, from big tech to startups, will dominate? And where do the risks and unintended consequences lie? I'm Emily Chang. Join me at Bloomberg Tech in San Francisco, May 9th, to answer many of the industry's burning questions, alongside Snap's Evan Spiegel, Xbox President Sarah Bond, OpenAI's Brad Lightcap, top researcher Dr. Fei-Fei Li of Stanford, and many more. More details and just a few tickets left at Bloomberg.com/TechSF.
This is the Bloomberg Business of Sports show, where we explore the big money issues in the world of sports. I'm Scarlett Fu.
And I'm Damian Sassauer.
And Michael Barr will be back next week. We miss you, but Michael's getting ready for one of the biggest days on the sports calendar, on the football calendar. It is the Super Bowl.
That's right, Scarlett. Our next guests are going to take us behind the scenes of how they're prepping for the Super Bowl at State Farm Stadium in Glendale, Arizona.
So let's welcome Ron Bensian, CEO of ASM Global, along with Doug Thornton, ASM's Global Executive Vice President of Arenas, Stadiums, and Theaters.
ASM Global operates over 350 venues worldwide, but right now we're focused on just one, State Farm Stadium in Glendale, where the Eagles and Chiefs will face off in Super Bowl 57. Oh, and by the way, Rihanna will also take the stage for the halftime show.
Yeah, I'm tuning in for that one. Ron, Doug, thank you so much for joining us on what is, I'm sure, a very busy week. Ron, why don't you get us started and tell us a little bit about what your last few days look like as you head into Super Bowl Sunday?
Yeah, I mean, this is, you know, it's a super exciting time, obviously. Everything's a little bit hectic, but a lot of planning goes in. There are essentially committees that are on the ground and operating on the ground for, you know, well in advance, maybe even a year in advance of these big events. And we've done so many of them. ASM Global has hosted 11 Super Bowls so far, and we are hosting the next three. So we've got an awful lot of experience in hosting these. We've got the confidence of the NFL and the venues that host these. So I can't say we've been there, done that, but I think that the experience of the team on the ground, as well as you know, from Doug's perspective and the senior leadership team that know how to get these kind of projects done, we're not running around like chickens with our heads cut off.
Well, you know, Ron here, I mean, for our audience, by the way, before you joined ASM, right, you were president of Live Nation, subsidiary Venue Nation, right, where you oversaw the largest portfolio of live music venues in the world. So for our audience here, Ron, it should come as no surprise that, you know, the big money question is, who brokered Rihanna's this year's halftime performer? I mean, I love the choice, don't get me wrong. I'm just curious, like, a decision like that, I mean, where does it reside? Is it the stadium? Is it ASM? I mean, do you have any influence? Is it the NFL front office or another body? Exactly. Who brokered Rihanna as this year's halftime performer?
I don't know. Doug might know, but I think that's an NFL decision.
Okay, it's an NFL decision.
That's an NFL decision, Damian. They are the ones that pick the talent, you know, for the show, but they would use a company like Live Nation typically to access that talent.
Understood. And look, I mean, you know, I guess the other thing I'd have for you, I mean, Doug, going, you know, you're obviously, you know, this is the Super Bowl, you know, there's been all this talk. I believe State Farm is 88 luxury boxes. I think you've had to build a lot more for the event. You know, I mean, as Scarlett will attest, I'm quite wealthy, right? I mean, I'm not private jet wealthy, but, you know, I'm just now emailing with my ticket broker, and she quoted me one club level suite, 18 tickets, two VIP parking passes for $1,050,000. I mean,
you got this, Damian.
You know,
it's
chump change, right? I mean, so here's the question I have. You know, compare that to, I don't know, Taylor Swift, who'll be performing in March, or Metallica in September. You know, for a suite there, I mean, is this just astronomical, $1,050,000, or do we even scratch the surface with other artists like Taylor Swift?
Well, it's exponentially higher than what you would see for a concert, but yeah, it's based on market demand. And what's happened over the last 25 years is the Super Bowl has become the largest event on the planet, and it is a major corporate event. The tickets are, you know, averaging $8,500 to $9,000. You know, the lowest price ticket face value is probably $2,500 in the upper deck. So it's largely a corporate event. The NFL understands that. I mean, some of the participating team fans will have a chance to buy tickets through their respective organizations, but it's based on market demand. And
hey, Damien, I think you could probably get it for $900,000 on Saturday. So just keep strolling through there, Betty.
Ron, I'll be sure to drop your name.
Inside tip I just gave you.
Doug, let me just jump in here. You've been at ASM for 27 years, and Ron mentioned how the company has hosted 11 Super Bowls. You are on tap for the next, for this one and the two after that, so that's another three. So that's a lot of experience in doing this, hosting this big game. Can you talk a little bit about how we know the game has grown in size, in importance, in cost, and in revenue generated? How have fan expectations changed throughout the years from what used to just be a really important game for the fans of two teams to an all-encompassing entertainment experience to now what's become, as George Pine of Bruins Sports Capital was telling me, a week-long trade show for people who are in the industry?
Well, it is. I actually characterize it as an NFL convention. It's like an end-of-the-year celebration of football, week-long celebration. And what has happened in the last 30 years, I've seen this actually since the last Super Bowl that was hosted in Phoenix in 1996, this exponential growth in what the Super Bowl can mean for your community. There are so many events that take place in and around the city, the destination. There are probably 35 or 40 sanctioned events this week that will take place in the Phoenix area, not just at the game. Jim Stieg, who was the former executive vice president for the NFL, who ran Super Bowl for many years, used to call it a four-hour excuse for a four-day party. And I think that's true. The Super Bowl is a four-hour game, but it's a 4 to 5 day event.
Yeah, I think that's the key point, is the outside outside the game hospitality. I mean, there's, if you go around there, we've seen some drone footage. I mean, it's tent city, a very high-end hospitality, multiple levels of entertainment and nightly events and daily events. And so I think Doug's right. It's an NFL convention, and all of the ancillary businesses associated with that tend to come out here and entertain during those times. So it's not the game. It's everything but the game that's changed.
From Silicon Valley to Wall Street, the promise and perils of artificial intelligence are playing out on the world stage. But what will the next phase of AI adoption look like? Which companies, from big tech to startups, will dominate? And where do the risks and unintended consequences lie? I'm Emily Chang. Join me at Bloomberg Tech in San Francisco, May 9th, to answer many of the industry's burning questions, alongside Snap's Evan Spiegel, Xbox President Sarah Bond, OpenAI's Brad Lightcap, top researcher Dr. Fei-Fei Li of Stanford, and many more. More details and just a few tickets left at Bloomberg.com/TechSF.
Well, Ron, I wonder if you could expand on that. I mean, we know ASM, you know, was instrumental in the development of places like LA Live, Mercedes-Benz Arena in Germany, you know, newly constructed venues that come with really what you're talking about here, an outdoor playground, you know, theaters, restaurants, museums, hotels, et cetera, you know. Talk to us about that. Is that really the layout, as, you know, many of these new stadiums are built, as these renovations go on with many of these older stadiums? Is that really, you know, the blueprint for success?
Yeah, I think it is. I think sports, concerts, they become more of a social event than I have to go see, you know, group X or game Y. There's still the hardcore fans that have to go see them. But what people are is making these events as just one element of their entertainment for that day. And so having external entertainment districts outside of these events that are huge, attendance draws, and so, 75,000 people walking through those gates, and creating an environment where people can hang out before the game, hang out after the game, and in some cases hang out during the game. You're seeing more premium spaces inside venues that are hangouts that people hang out, can't even see the game in some cases, because people are really taking advantage of the social atmosphere that the game allows for. And so yeah, I think it is the blueprint. I think where owners and cities can accommodate an entertainment district within, you know, walking distance or within the entry exit traffic patterns of a major sports facility or arena. We manage an arena right across the way from State Farm that has one of the best entertainment districts in all of the U.S. So we understand that dynamic of putting outside retail entertainment experiences within, you know, legs reach of an arena.
Of course, this year, when you host the Super Bowl, and I know we just talked about how this is a big dollar event, and obviously people go into this celebrating the sport of football, celebrating the industry. So people are ready to lay out a lot of cash. But I wonder how current economic conditions, in which you have rising inflation, there's definitely supply chain issues that are still being worked through, and also a tight labor market, which makes it difficult to hire on the spot. How does that impact ASM's ability to prep for this Super Bowl as opposed to the past, when economic conditions were very different? And perhaps, Doug, this is a question for you, given that you're on the ground right now in Phoenix.
Well, I can answer that for you. We have seen some inflationary pressures. You know, unlike other, you know, markets, Phoenix has not been impacted as much as some of the other cities. We have we're fully staffed. We've been fully staffed for the entire football season. But, you know, like other cities, we're seeing pressure on wages. You know, anywhere from 15% to 25% increases across the board for various disciplines. But there will be literally thousands of workers. There are probably 8,500 credential workers that will be on site for the game this weekend, ranging from security to guest services, food service, production, you just go down the list. Many of those folks are third-party vendors who will be flown in from other jurisdictions, subcontractors to the NFL, subcontractors to us. Some of them are full-time staff that we would have employed at the stadium, but we'll be fully staffed. It's not going to impact us at all this week.
Yeah, I would think, I would say, you know, given the fact that you have so much time to plan for this meeting and given the this game event, and given the fact that we've done so many of these, I think we're able to really look at and understand where there are going to be any issues, whether it's you know, it's on staffing or equipment supplies, supply chain kind of stuff. And we know where to look, mm-hmm. and we know how to react and do whatever it takes to bring in and ensure that we're ready to go. So you've got the ability and the luxury of time to plan, and I think you have the ability and luxury of ASM and tooting our horn, but it's well-deserved, who really gets this game and understands how to produce big events.
Well, I mean, you know, Ron, you make a great point. You've got venues abroad in cities ranging from, what, Sydney and Kowloon to Dubai and Berlin. You know, how does the international experience compare with that of the U.S.? And I'm not talking the Super Bowl specifically, but I'm really talking about what kind of hinting, you know, playing off what Scarlett was saying about inflation, you know, going up or remaining sticky high and growth coming down globally. You know, how, from a P&L perspective, you know, the costs, you know, the expenses that go into holding an event like this, you know, the revenue, you know, the match, you know, the margins, you know, how do you compare, you know, internationally what goes on there relative to what goes on here domestically in the U.S.?
I mean, look, we have 350 buildings around the globe, from arenas, stadiums to smaller venues, theaters and coliseums and convention centers. So we have data from you know, across the globe that we can look at to understand what's happening on a macro basis in our business. So what we were able to do is really look at the macroeconomic issues and make, you know, decisions on the fly, you know, based on what we see. I would say from a, you know, inflation perspective, the only area that's really been tough is energy costs in Europe, obviously due to, you know, what's going on over there. But even they are subsiding a little bit. I think everybody's seen some inflationary in wages and cost of goods and things like that, and some of it gets passed on. Some of it we deal with just through efficiency and other pieces of it we have to eat. So, you know, you just keep monitoring all that. You're able to really view, again, really the macroeconomics of our business and really make changes in one market that may not affect another market, and we're able to kind of be quite nimble for both our clients and our company in ensuring that we're driving revenues and profitability to these venues.
Rod, before we let you go, I just wanted to get your take. Damian recounted your bio and how you were the president of Venue Nation, which is a division of Live Nation, through 2020. I'm curious on your take of the congressional hearings taking place on Ticketmaster and Taylor Swift.
Yeah, I don't have an opinion. You know, it was a major issue. I think Ticketmaster's fessed up to it, and I'm not going to get into the politics or all of that. It's really not my forte or experience. Ticketmaster, you know, they're doing the Beyonce sale. Everything's going well. That's all I can. Yeah. You know, that's
what's the best way for someone who wants to get a ticket but seems to always be behind the curve when they do go on Ticketmaster or any of those websites that supposedly can get them tickets when they are first released? How do they work through that?
Yeah, look, there are issues with respect to bots. There are issues with respect to pre-sales. But I've talked to a lot of people who've gotten Beyonce tickets and a lot of people who got Taylor Swift tickets. You know, things happened on Taylor Swift that didn't happen on Beyonce, that didn't happen on the sale of Super Bowl tickets. I mean, there are these high pressure sales that come out, and things happen. But for the most part, there are, you know, Ticketmaster has systems of waiting rooms and allowing people to know where they sit in the queue, and ultimately they service and sell millions and millions and millions of tickets annually. So they're good at what they do, and unfortunately they had a problem in this particular case.
And Ron and Doug, just one last thing. I know you're hosting the Super Bowl the next 2 years. Just making a pitch here. I know it's not your call, but Pearl Jam, great halftime show. I mean, great band. Yeah. I don't know if
you've
ever heard of them.
You're such a Gen Xer.
You know, I don't know if you've ever seen any of their show. Wonderful. Guys, thanks so much. It was awesome.
This is the Bloomberg Business of Sports show. We're here each and every week at the same time. We're also online. You know, it is 2023. Wherever you get your podcasts, you can catch those on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. And of course, reach out to us on social media. I'm at Scarlett Fu on Twitter.
And I'm at D Sassauer.
Thanks so much for joining us. Tune in again next week for the latest on the stories moving big money in the world of sports. You're listening to Bloomberg Business of Sports from Bloomberg Radio around the world.
From Silicon Valley to Wall Street, the promise and perils of artificial intelligence are playing out on the world stage. But what will the next phase of AI adoption look like? Which companies, from big tech to startups, will dominate? And where do the risks and unintended consequences lie? I'm Emily Chang. Join me at Bloomberg Tech in San Francisco, May 9th, to answer many of the industry's burning questions, alongside Snap's Evan Spiegel, Xbox President Sarah Bond, OpenAI's Brad Lightcap, top researcher Dr. Fei-Fei Li of Stanford, and many more. More details and just a few tickets left at Bloomberg.com/TechSF.